For February the 24th, 2023, we talk about Fire Emblem Engage, Theatrhythm, Final Bar Line, Chaos Head, Noah, and much more. Welcome to Level 448. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jala.
Hi, I'm here. And for once, Ben isn't. Surprise!
Yeah,
waiting.
He is the most consistently attended person. So it is rare to get this combination. I did a calculation once of what the rarest combo was. But I forget what it was, and also that's changed over time. So
I think technically it would be the one episode where you couldn't make it and we rebelled and made our own episode.
Yes, that would be, but that's a bonus level, so I don't know that that counts, because there was also me and Jala doing those bonus levels.
I see how it is, keeping control over the methods of production.
But you told on yourself, bonus levels, so it's happened more than once.
True, yes. Okay. I'm not interested in defining the gerrymandering around
now,
this.
Now you made your bed already. You got to lay in it. Well, anyway, no, we don't
I'm
have
gonna
to
find
gang
a way
up
to
that.
Hack the feed and post an episode that's just me for 30 seconds so that I can have the rarest combination.
It's me. I wasn't even trying to claim the rarest for myself. I was saying the four of us generally. It's not the, yeah.
I guess it has to be a combination to be the rarest combination. So who wants to do this with me?
Well, the rarest combination I would think would be an episode that's a three style without Ben.
Yes. Mm. It would have to be one of those. But then
also probably close would be like a five way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Also that one time we did that and it lasted forever.
I know.
Also, it makes me hungry for Skyline.
Oh, a five way. That's what? That's up to onions.
Yeah, I actually don't like five ways, but still.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. Jala, how are you?
Hi. Well, things have been an adventure, but I'm not going to talk about all of that. I will say, however, that up for Jala-chan's place here soon, something that is of pertinence to listeners, is that I'm going to be interviewing Rupert Booth of Contradiction and the Shapeshifting Detective fame. So that episode is scheduled to drop on May 12th. Going to be recorded before then. But he said that he's got a potentially super exciting announcement and some fun preview, sneak peek, whatever, debut stuff that will be exclusive to that show. So
awesome.
So is every question just going to be you holding something up and being like, does this mean anything to you?
Right.
For people who are not drawing a connection here, this is Jenks from Contradiction. This is huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you've played Diavecchi Studios, the Shapeshifting Detective, he is Chief DuPont in that.
This rules. I was really excited when you posted that in our little backstage. Yeah.
So I'm excited about that. So that'll be coming up soon on my own show. So yay. The other thing that I've been doing is I got my physical copy of Deck of Wonders in.
Yeah.
And, awesome. And you know, I'm not sure if Dennis actually believed me when I said that I know fuck all about card games, but like once I started texting him in the morning, drinking my coffee, trying to look through the instructions and watch the videos and everything to learn how to play this game over coffee with Dave, I'm sitting here and I'm like, what? And then I had to text him a lot. And I text him pictures and whatever. And then, like, I'm sure he thought it was done. And then, like, 5 minutes later, there'd be another one. So, like, and this happened for a couple of days in a row because I, like, played it in the morning over coffee a couple of days in a row over the weekend and, you know, bothered Dennis. And at this point, I've like, okay, well, if I don't know, I'm going to leave this poor man alone and I'm just going to go with whatever my gut feeling is and just not bother him anymore.
What I think you should have learned is to trust Dave.
Dave has played other card games before, but then again, some of the stuff just wasn't in the rules. And he was like, well, I don't know. We need to know what it is, because he's very much like, read the instructions. He's got to read the tags on everything. And
RTFM.
And, yeah. So.
No, so, I think he was batting 1,000 because I'd get this text from Dara like, all right, what does this mean? Or how do you do this? Or what happens if this? And then it usually would come with like a Dave says X, Y, Z, but I don't know. I felt like I didn't need to ask you. And then my response was like, yep, no, Dave's got it. Yep, that's it.
Except for like, there was at least one question that like he didn't know. And I was like, Dennis, what is this? And then you're like, oh, it's this or whatever.
I might have to read back the tape. The fun thing was like, you'd ask me a situational question and I'd read it and be like, how the hell did she get herself in that predicament? Like, what? How did that specific combination come up? Like, what? So, yeah, it was very clearly Jala doing Jala on the game. And I was very amused by that.
Well, and listeners have heard me say before, like, if there's a game, I'm going to find a way to break it, you know? Yes. And so it's like, you know, you really... The next time you play test anything, Dennis, you need to run it by me because I don't know fuck all about it. And I'm going to sit here and do whatever I'm doing. You know, it's going to come out that I'm going to have something unique that you've not seen before from somebody else. So,
well, not to toot my own horn, but I was tempted to start sending you rules references like per page on the rule book. There aren't 80 pages in the rule books. But, you know, I could have done that, but I didn't. One, I didn't want to invest the trouble to like go find the page number for everything. And two, I thought that would come off as per my last email.
It's a little, let me Google the first one, right?
Yeah.
Well, the thing was, is that like Dave held the rule book in his hand. And so he was the one who had the thing in his hand and he's like, I don't see it in here. And then he'd tell me that. And I'm like, well, let me just ask Dennis. So, so that's how that went.
Did you get around to beating Cullen?
Yes, I beat Cullen. And then the first time, not the second time, because I got that forest fire thing come up more than once and then lots of forest trolls in my hand that I couldn't do anything with, which was fun.
So, I can't believe you're doing this to me.
I have invented a game to have banter that is completely meaningless to Cole.
Yay. Cole, you're not doing your due diligence on the show.
No, it's not that I haven't it's got nothing to do with me. It's just more that you're talking about games in the non-game kind of section.
There's not a whole lot I have to say about that other than the fact that I got my physical copy and I played it. I don't know anything about card games, and if people don't believe me, I refer them to Dennis. I don't know anything about card games.
Patient Dennis. So.
Yes, and I was trying to talk up to, you know, Dennis's patience for one, and then also the game that I played it more than once in a row rather than going, fuck this, I'm so mad. I have to ask questions about this to figure out what's going on. So
I'm looking forward to getting my copy. It'll be, I'll sometime. Set aside time. You know. I know how this stuff goes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, that kind of segues into my stuff, but
go ahead.
I don't want to step on any toes. My like palette of Deck of Wonders stuff came from the distributor. Finally. but it means that I've like got all my stuff now, which is amazing. And the playmats actually blew me out of the water. I just posted to the Slack just a whole bunch of the playmats. Like, they printed way, way nicer than I expected they were going to, and they just look really cool, and I'm over the moon. So I am loaded for bear come con season.
Yeah.
And that will be exciting.
Well,
so when you come into Dragon Con.
I don't know, man. As soon as you can get me an exhibitor booth, let's do this. I've been amazed. Well, I wasn't surprised that Gen Con was already out of booths. I was surprised that Origins was out of booths. And so I'll probably either be partnering with someone that's like got a retailer booth, or I will just run events the entire time and have product to sell. So yeah, we'll see. But I will definitely be at Origins and Gen Con at least, and we'll see what else I can get signed up for.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say that after I started playing it, then I was like looking at the website and going, oh, look, there's a little health counter tracker thing that's a dial. That's better. Oh, look, the playmat. That would be nice. So, like, got some extra sales, by the way.
There you go. Awesome. Well, that wasn't going to be my thing this week. My thing, just to try to make everyone die of cuteness overload, Barrett has started beatboxing.
Nice.
This is a phase that Luke and Milo went through, but it's hit Barrett way earlier. And so I got a video from his grandma today being like, so Barrett's beatboxing for me. And I put that in the Slack, but it is just about the most adorableness that you will ever see.
Is it? I'll check this out.
Is it good?
Well, I mean, like, how are his technical skills?
They are emerging.
Yeah, he's doing like little. Yeah, he's doing beats. That's
he's got the idea for sure.
Yeah, that's a happy looking kid.
Yeah,
cute. Yeah. It always confuses me though. You know, I get the beats, but when do they start boxing?
Yes. There was another video that I didn't post where he's like grabbing at the camera and he's trying to swipe the phone like finger swipe. But from the opposite side.
Okay.
And so that's just, you know, kids these days, just assume that literally every surface can be swiped.
Do you find that that's the case with the older kids?
Not as much, but well, it definitely happens.
Presumably like they're not trying to figure it out.
Yeah. You know, Luke and Milo aren't trying to swipe like a picture frame, but Barrett definitely is. That's amusing in and of its own. But anyway, I'll see if there's a way to get Gwen that audio, get it cut in or something like that. It is pretty great.
A box.
Are you beatboxing?
Yeah,
beatboxing.
it is very cute. David, how about you?
So my big thing this week is I've dove into the world of cooking. So before this, my meal of choice for the last several years was just microwave some chicken tenders, some cheese, some beans from a can, and some guacamole, wrap it up in a tortilla, and then that's like all you need. But I'm trying to, actually not be a goblin. Okay. And so I basically made beans and rice, except at Jolly's suggestion, because I'm trying to cut down on calories. Instead of using actual rice, I used riced cauliflower.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then just added some okra, some tomatoes, and basically just all of the jalapenos.
Yeah. He's not joking there. There's like, it's rows of jalapenos that he put on this thing.
It's like, it's jalapeno business.
It's like a good quarter of a jar, like a good sized jar of pickled jalapenos on top.
Yeah.
I'm all about that jalapeno. So yeah. Trying to lose some weight, get in a little bit better shape, and then also trying to eat less meat.
Yeah.
So
all are admirable. Yeah, the riced cauliflower, that is a really good thing, just because you can like it you can freeze it and it cooks easier. Exactly. I mean even with a rice cooker, well, I generally resent using a specific a specific appliance to cook something, you know, mm-hmm. but like, I don't know, I've gotten more consistent results with rice cauliflower, than I have with, you know, actual rice. So yeah. Nice. Well, that's a journey. And, my tip, I'm not very good at this, but I have noticed that, the more flavorful I make my food and therefore the more spices I use, the less of it I feel the need to eat.
Yeah. And definitely like once you are chopping out stuff that make, you know, is kind of like feel good go-tos, like tons of cheese, which has lots and lots of fat in it. You know, you have to do something to give it some flavor. So like you getting a good sauce made, like making a good sauce, getting some good sauce recipes down, or, you know, some good spice mixes really makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's sense.
That's fun. I wish I would have learned to do that earlier. But a lot of like when I was in college and shortly out of college, a lot of my cooking was, all right, I don't have a lot of money. So, yeah. It's going to be sad meals. It's going to be struggle meals.
It's amazing how we go to, go to school for 12 years, but don't come out of it learning useful life skills like how to cook.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's like almost like relegating home ec to one gender is a very bad idea.
Yeah, I agree. You're saying that like it's a controversial thing, but I think it.
No, that's it. There's sarcasm because that should be so obvious.
Oh yes. Okay. No, I'm sarcastically not acknowledging your sarcasm. parry that attack. Yeah. for me, this is a PSA. For the past week, I have been real keyed up and anxious. Don't let your cats anywhere near rubber bands.
Oh no!
Yeah. So I'm not positive that one of the cats ate a rubber band. All I know is I brought in the
it
mail.
It bounces now.
All I know is I brought in some mail that was wrapped with a rubber band. I'm normally very paranoid about this. I set it down on a side table, and went and did something else and forgot about it. And then I realized the next morning when I came out that there was no rubber band around that mail anymore. People like stereotypically is like, oh yeah, a cat will, you know, chase a rubber band or, you know, so I'll just flick it across the room and they'll go play with it or whatever. Not supposed to. Because anything long like that, and especially elastic, can really fuck up their guts in a way that I am not going to describe because it's very distressing. So, about a week now of inspecting their waist every day and just really watching their behavior to see if they're doing anything weird. To basically figure out, okay, which one of you did it? I know it was Dottie. I know it was Dottie who did this. But like, do I need to scoop you up and put you in a carrier and drive you an hour away to a pet ER rather? So far, they're good. Nothing. Can't find the rubber band. No idea. But yeah, real anxious about that because it can indeed be fatal.
Yeah, that's a big thing for sure.
Yeah, the trick of it is watching a cat to see if they're doing anything weird. Cats always are weird.
Yes.
You know,
so checking water to see if it's wet.
Yeah. So, you know, and like they go through phases, like, you know, they say check and see if they're like lethargic or if they're withdrawn. And it's like, well, sometimes Dottie just disappears, mm-hmm. you know, and then she was gone, like disappeared for a few days, you know, like really scarce. Give her space. I was like really, really worried about it. And then she's perfectly cuddly, you know, so just a PSA. Don't even let yourself get into a situation where you might be terrified like that.
Yeah, and I guess I can just go ahead and tack this on real quick. My senior schnoodle Pooh Bear, who is 13, had some updated shots, and part of the reason why I am exhausted today and kind of too keyed up is because she had 3 shots yesterday, and they were a couple of vaccines and an allergy shot, and she had a reaction, but it didn't happen until like 10 o'clock at night. And the reaction to all of these medications are the same. So she was super feverish. She was swollen up. She was panting. She was skittish and scared. You know, she was itchy. She was nauseous and eating grass, and just like she could not stay still. She was just moving all over the place, and she woke everybody in the house up, and you know, because she didn't know what was going on. And you know, so we were all just trying to comfort her, and anyway, like nobody got any sleep, but today she is a lot better, so I think she's over the worst of it. The internet said, because I was like, okay, do we need to take her to an ER, like a vet, you know, emergency vet. But the internet said that no, like this will be for 24 to 36 hours.
God.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, I mean, when I had my COVID boosters and stuff, those knocked me on my ass for like a week. So, I mean, I get it,
yeah.
You know, and it was a vet who gave her the shots. It wasn't just a random place, you know, like it wasn't like a you know, pet store or something that I got the shots at. So
I gotta say, it would be kind of weird if you got like back alley dog shots.
Well, you know, they have all those places that do like free shots, and I don't know how they vet their people or anything. Like, are those people who volunteer or whatever? Like, I'm not educated about this to know. So, but anyway, like we took her for her heart medicine, and that's part of the thing. She's got heart issues. So since she's a senior pupper, we were just like, oh no. You know, is she going to have a heart attack or something from how fast her heart's beating because she's so feverish right now and so keyed up. So, but she got over the worst of it. My dad stayed up with her all night, and we were up for half the night, and she's better now. But yeah, more pet crises, but we're over the worst of that as well. So
that's good. Yeah. So just take care of them, because if anything goes wrong, it's not like you can explain to them what's going on.
No, that's the worst part.
Yeah. So we've been caught up. I want to talk about video games, and I think I know the place to do it. What with the regular kind of show and the grind and the multiplayer and the end boss. So why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
I love how you were kind of like double checking in your head about like what the order of the segments were and to make sure they were the right segments that you said. Anyway, So the last time I was on, I was saying that I was going to talk about Fire Emblem Fates Birthright and Fire Emblem Engage and do like a compare contrast. So I've already talked about both of these games previously when I just sunk, you know, like 10, 15 hours in or whatever. So I will update on my progress today. So I'm about 60 or 70%, depending upon which one of the games you're talking about, through both of them. I was hoping to get more done, but lots of random things have happened between the last time I was on and now. So here we are. Mm-hmm. So to refresh folks, the pertinent mainline Fire Emblem games were, in the last several years at least, Awakening in 2012, Fates in 2015, Echoes, which was the remake of the second game in 2017, Three Houses in 2019, and then Engage this year. So at this point, I played all of them. And once I finish Fates and Engage, that means that I've played everything from 2012 on from the series, at least for the main lines. So I'll just mention some stuff that each of these games kind of does well and doesn't do so well now that I've gotten some time in on them. Fates adds new tactical elements over Awakening. Most notably, you can pair up to shield a character, so you can toggle between the two characters that you have paired up as to who is the active party. Only the active party gains XP or can attack, but that also means that if like there is an archer around and you have a flyer, you can pair the flyer up with somebody and protect them and then toggle over to them to move your guy farther across the map or something. So like this actually is a pretty good tactical element. And you can also burn a turn splitting up the pair as well if you don't desire to have them like as a single unit on the map anymore. Like when you get to the bad guy or whatever, you know, like the big bad guy or whatnot at the end of the map. Individual units also can gain abilities like swap, where you can switch places with another unit in range, shove or smite, where you move another unit a space or two in a given direction, shelter, where you can protect another unit, and so on. So like those are also elements that I don't believe were in Awakening.
And I mean, definitely weren't in the Game Boy Advance ones that I remember playing. I mean, like, they barely had the system where two people fighting next to each other would improve their relationship, which is like the thing about Fire Emblem. Yeah.
Hey, you know, builds relationships like murdering some folks.
Hey, you know, not just a bond over a secret.
Yeah, it's almost like you could say that, you know, love blooms on battlefield.
I wouldn't say that.
Speaking of love blooming on a battlefield, like Awakening, you can also marry your character. So they have kids who grow up rapidly. In this game, they grow up rapidly in a weird alternate dimension that exists conveniently just for the purposes of your kids being able to get old enough to appear in your party. So it's pretty
super
lame.
Dark.
No.
Like, they have, it's like, here, we're just gonna, you know, the current climate is very dangerous. So instead of raising you like a child as we go place to place and fight this war, we're just gonna send you to the Outrealms. Bye. Have fun over there, kiddos.
They put them in the hyperbolic
time chamber. Yes, they did.
Yeah. Okay.
And then like they just come in via paralogs. So it's real nonsense. It's at least in Awakening, they were like, the children, they came from the future, which is ruined, in order to come back into the past and try to fix it before it happened. And then never mind the time paradoxes. We're not talking about the timey-wimey bullshit. You know, but at least it made sense, sort of, the way that they did it there. But they were trying to shoehorn it in here, and it just was, like, nonsense. So,
yeah, that's bleak.
Yeah. Also, as mentioned before, you can marry family members, which is real gross. And also, this game is the one that had all the face-petting mechanics, which were sort of taken out of the American release. But, like, you still have that image on the screen. Like, you can't do anything to them, but they're sitting there blushing and squirming around, and it's very weird.
Wait, is that the tea party thing?
No, that is a result of this face-petting mechanic that was in Fire Emblem Fates.
So if you're really good at face-petting, you get to have a tea party.
A tea party where you're like looking at and potentially also touching, depending upon like some of the things that some of the characters say, this like your students and also other teachers in the tea parties in Three Houses. So like that's like the inherited gross, terrible thing. So like this one, the face petting thing is the worst thing. The worst thing about any of the Fire Emblem games. The second worst thing is the tea parties. So,
oh no.
The one good thing that came out of this was the people that figured out how to mod in the like Dark Knight guy to the tea parties.
That's very good. So anyway, like I talked before about how much nonsense the romance stuff is, about like if you like I married one of the people and then like he. If like after a certain point of a certain amount of time that you bond with him over time, like I walked in one day and he's like, oh, I'm so hot from the bath. You have to blow on me to cool me down. So you have to like use the little because they wanted to use the mechanic of being able to blow on the 3DS. And that was the whole point. And so you have to literally blow on the 3DS to cool him down from his hot bath. And this is like the biggest ongoing joke that I have with Dave right now.
you say have to, I say no, I don't.
Yeah, I know, just let him pass out, it's fine, like who even knows, like whatever. So anyway,
well, that raises an interesting question. What's the fail condition on all these scenarios?
You don't blow hard enough, and then it says next time blow harder.
Oh god.
I tried. Jeez. So I was like, oh, does he pass out and like have to go to basically the hospital? That would be interesting. No. So anyway, Yeah, continuing talking about Fates, though, a lot of the characters just don't have any story interaction after a certain point, which is disappointing. And even though that's the case, and so like a lot of the characters are just kind of along for the ride and don't really have anything to do, the story itself is more complex than Awakening. So that's not really all that difficult, though, because Awakening had the barest ass of a plot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine.
Yeah.
But this title does away with weapon durability. I know a lot of people are bitter about weapon durability things. So once you have a weapon in this game, you have it forever. And they kept that in Fire Emblem Echoes as well. Neither Fates nor Echoes has a weapon durability as a factor you have to consider. They brought it back in Three Houses, and then they took it away again in Engage. So
weird.
Every once in a while, they put it in there, and they're like, "Nope, everybody still hates it," and then they move on.
Now, yeah. If only Zelda could learn this.
Well, okay, so the Fates title also has a lot of online interactivity, which might have been cool for people using it like back in the day, but it fails in the long term pretty obviously. Like, you could have visitors come to your fortress and buy wares from other people passing through, but also there's other failed mechanics. Like, there is the ability to scout the map, which I used all of one time, found pointless, and stopped doing. Another is that people can invade your fortress and then you have to defend it. And I mentioned this last time. It's a lot of nonsense because the damage to all the buildings and stuff just doesn't last. It's only there for the one battle and then it goes away. And then you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah.
So luckily, though, the stuff that you can do at base is limited, so you don't waste a lot of time there. And this is notable because in Three Houses and to a certain extent in Engage, which I'll talk about in a minute, there are so many things to do that can drag the pacing of the actual story and battles through the mud. Mm-hmm. So in Three Houses, I feel like even though there was like tons and tons of stuff to do in the academy, it felt like two different phases of the game that are equal in length, but also both important for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I didn't feel...
Three Houses, all alike in dignity?
Well, sort of, I guess, except, like, in the plot, like, there's definitely some characters that really suck. Anyway, yeah, so Fates doesn't have many cutscenes, and most of the scenes play out with little 3D models that have no feet. So it's really difficult to take anything seriously. They have no feet, and they're super deformed, so... overall, I find the battles in Fates really less challenging than Awakening, and the characters are less endearing, but the story is better, and there are some fun new mechanics that got pulled forward, at least in Fire Emblem Heroes, which is the mobile game.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of fun because I played Heroes before I got very deep into Fates. So going and playing Fates and going, oh my gosh, I know those skills. They're in Fire Emblem Heroes. Like, it was kind of neat to see, oh, this is where those came from.
Yeah. You know?
So moving right along, though, unless anybody has questions about Fates, I will talk about Engage.
The one with Pepsi Chan?
Yes, Pepsi Colgate Chan. Oh, and by the way, my friend Brandon McInnes, who plays Male Alir, the English voice of Male Alir, and sings the title opening song, he commissioned an artist to do a piece of artwork of Male Alir, and it's Male Alir with Sami, which is like this little mascot character that lives in your base, and there's like Sami's holding a Pepsi, and then there's like the thing of Colgate next to him. It's very good. And that's what he's using to sign at cons, like for signing his signature.
So that's pretty good.
It's very good. I'll have to find a link to that so I can show you. It'll probably be after I'm done talking about Engage. Yeah. But anyway, Engage. It's not horny. I'm glad.
not horny, and also not very concerned with hitting you with a lot of story, which both sound like... big thumbs up from me.
Is this even a Fire Emblem game?
Well, the older Fire Emblems weren't all up in. It was like Awakening and Fates were really bad. And then Echoes backed off of that and didn't really have any of that at all. It's not horny. But then Three Heroes got horny again. Mm-hmm. And then now Engage backed off of it again. Like, there's some elements where like you can still marry people. And you can actually, what's notable about this one is you can marry as either gender. So like if the character is marriageable, you can marry them regardless of you playing female or male Allyr, which is nice. Mm-hmm. This is the first time they've done that. Yeah. Also, there are a bunch of characters that you can just form a platonic friendship with. You can't just marry rote everybody that's in your party. So like there are younger characters, for example, and loner types who just don't want to get married. And like you can't get them married to anybody. They won't do it.
Hey, them asexuals.
Yeah, Aero people exists. Yeah.
So I have not gotten to the part where I can marry someone yet because it takes a special item to do it. But that is a thing. And like it's not like an automatic, oh, you automatically marry them as soon as you hit S level support. It's no, you have to pick somebody when you get that far using an item. So that's cool. So you don't have to marry anybody if you don't want to. So anyway, recently more DLC unlocked. So before I advance the story any further, I want to go play the DLC to get more emblems. The first DLC battle against Tiki, or Cheeky, if you want to use her original name, was a challenge. And it was also a lot of fun. I really liked that battle a lot. So I'm looking forward to the I think there's like four other battles that unlock that you can get emblem rings from. So as I said before, Engage also does not have weapon durability. So once you have a weapon, you just have it forever. So that's nice.
That's good.
It does have some superfluous elements, like the first being investing in relationships with different countries. You can give money to different countries, like donate to them to help them improve whatever. And when you do that, it allows you to adopt different animals there for keeping in your farmyard at base. And it allows you to encounter rarer enemies and have a higher chance to win rarer items in battle, but only in that one country. And you pass through like a bunch of countries. So, I think I've got like three or four open right now. So, you'd have to level up and invest in every single one of those to have the whole map covered. And once you finish the story missions there, that means you have to grind in that specific place, you know, like to try to get anything of value. So that's really kind of hokey and crappy. So like,
basically like colonialism. You find their rare stuff and then presumably put it in your museums.
Yeah, pretty much. So level one is about all you really need to unlock some of the stuff. You don't really need to go any further than that, because otherwise you're kind of just sinking all your money in for no reason. Mm-hmm. So, also your time at your base is fine at first, but as you unlock more stuff, as you play, it starts to become really boring and routine, because like at first you just run around collecting a few shinies and stuff to give to people. And you work out via a mini game to get bonuses on your stats in the next battle, which at the beginning is really important. And you can shine the emblem rings and have your characters spar. And at first, that's all you can do. But now I can go fishing. I can do a wyvern riding shooting mini game thing in the air. And I can go to the Tower of Trials, which is all of this whole different thing I'll talk about in a minute. And none of this is as robust as the different things going on at the Academy and Three Houses. So it gets really tiring because it's just kind of repeating itself. So unfortunately, not great. So the Tower of Trials has some independent challenge runs you can do, such as Tempest Trials, where you play multiple maps without being able to heal in between battles. So if your people die, or if you are at like 5 hit points, that's how you are when you start battle 2. You know, and so on and so forth. And you can go through a different number of battles in a row in the Tempest Trials. Mm-hmm. And that's something that they actually brought in from the Fire Emblem Heroes game. The mobile game has Tempest Trials, and they brought it over to this game from the mobile. So they also have Relay Trials, which basically you play a certain number of turns, and then the theory is somebody else picks up your file and then plays the next number of turns and then passes it to someone else who plays the next number of turns and stuff. And then depending upon the results of the battle, you get different bonus stuff. That sounds great. And I tried it, but to this day, nobody has picked up my file that I had done. So like I didn't get anywhere with that. It sounds cool. nice idea. The actual implementation, I don't know if I did somehow did something wrong, but I, every time I check back, it says I'm the only person who did anything. And I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. I didn't put it on private. Yeah. So like I let it be, whoever wants it can get it. So mm-hmm. I don't know, but
yeah,
anyway, there's also an Outrealms trial thing where you can create your own battle maps and share them. So it's kind of like Mario Maker for Fire Emblem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't engage with that. That takes too much of my time, but yeah. It's cool that it's there and I could probably go there and play somebody else's battle map if I wanted.
Have you poked around with playing with any other folks?
I haven't, like, I know like one or two people who are playing this game, but like I haven't bothered them to say, hey, do you want to pick up, very specifically pick up my relay trial and see what's going on?
Right.
Or did you make any maps in the Outrealm trial? But like, otherwise there's not really any co-op elements. There's like the mm-hmm. Tower of Trials is about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The random ones have to be like 80% dicks, right?
Yes. So anyway, other than that, though, the voice acting is phenomenal. The music and the cutscenes are all really good. The story gets more interesting as it goes, but it's Fire Emblem, so it's not a suspense novel, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the characters are very fun and endearing. So even though, like, some of the characters at the start, I'm like, I don't know if I like them. Like, over time, they grew on me. I'm currently iffy about the newest characters that I got added to my party. And I'm like, I don't know if I like you guys. And there's definitely, like, a particular character that Dave absolutely just cannot stand.
Dude.
He's just boring. He's milquetoast. I hate that guy. Mm-hmm. So, but like, I don't know, there might be more to him and I just haven't seen enough of him yet to learn all of his quirks. But anyway, it is very delightful to see all their interactions with each other. All the characters interacting with each other is usually one of the most entertaining things about a Fire Emblem other than the battles themselves.
Yeah.
So of the two of these, I very much prefer Engage. And since I listed out all of the most recent Fire Emblem games, mainline games, I will list in order my ranking. So okay. I would say Engage first, then Awakening, then Three Houses, then Echoes, and then Fates.
Mm.
So I like Engage better than Awakening because, again, there's some parts in Awakening that are like, oh, that's a little bit much, you know. Although I like a lot of the gameplay elements in Awakening quite a bit. Three Houses, I rank higher than Echoes, which I enjoyed quite a bit, just because in Three Houses, I did enjoy all of the Academy mechanics as well as the battle stuff. So I liked how dynamic it was and that there were those segments. I realized that like not everybody's going to feel that way.
Yeah.
Echoes is better than Fates. It's not horny. And like, you know, the game plays really well. It's interesting because that's like the one that has the dungeon segments, like the 3D, you know, over the shoulder dungeon parts where you're running around as Alm, the main character. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then Fates last out of those. So,
yeah. If you asked me to guess what your rankings would be, I would probably get something close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just based on the way you've talked about all of them.
Yeah, for sure. So that's what I've got. There's my compare contrast of Fates and Engage.
Yeah. I mean, just a snapshot of a series about a decade apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Neat. Have you beaten Fates?
No, I think I'm about 70 or maybe even 75% through with that one, but mm-hmm. I have not had time to beat it. I was just like intending on playing some more today and getting even further, but you know, things have come up.
Uh-huh, yeah,
So, I have not beaten either one of them yet, but I hope to have them beaten sometime soon. It depends on what life keeps throwing at me.
Yeah. Cool. I've got mine. I'll go ahead and do these. So the new thing that I have been playing is Theatrhythm. final bar line. If you recognize that weird nonsense name, you would know, yes, this is a Square Enix game. And also because Theatrhythm Final Fantasy has been the series that has been coming out since the 3DS days. I think there was an iOS version as well for a little while. It is a rhythm game that is that uses the music from Final Fantasy throughout the ages, from one to whatever is most current, kind of works in not just hitting the musical prompts and all of that, but in addition to that, it is kind of works in like a battle system where getting especially well-timed hits will cause your dudes who are auto battling at the bottom to do a critical hit, and certain conditions allow for special moves, things like that. To be honest, I'm not really paying attention to the metagame stuff right now where you're building a party. I am mostly just here because a rhythm game based on video game music is great. It's a very good idea, and I'm surprised that more of it we haven't seen more of it. Like, for example, I do not understand how we haven't seen a game that is built around just the music from the Mega Man series. Right.
God, that'd be so good.
Yeah. Like, you know, Mega Man X, work in Battle Network. Like, how awesome would that be?
I want that thing. Dang it.
Uh-huh. But Final Fantasy is it's a good second place. Right. So the play is about as similar as you can get. I'm playing it on the Switch, but it's not designed overall for things with touch screens. Like, there's a PS4 version and stuff like that, PS5, what have you. So the elements where you were hitting the different spaces, there are like four rows. That has gone away primarily because you could also play those with the buttons. In certain stages, there are like long notes where you were kind of tracing a wiggly line up and down for like sustains, things like that. That is instead like those kind of prompts are still there, but you are doing you're just moving the control stick up and down at the articulation points, which is fine. I don't think there's anything that's lost by taking this away from touchscreen. In fact, I think buttons are just way more reliable. So that is good. The music, unsurprisingly, is amazing because Final Fantasy has really cool music. This was true even back in the older versions, like Theatrhythm Curtain Call, which was the one that I had played of these, kind of the edition with more songs that came to the 3DS. You pick a game in the series, and then you've got to complete that before you can unlock a different one. I think you can have like two or three games kind of open at a time before you finish one, and can open up another, and you get keys to open different different games in the series, and different games in the series, because they have different musical styles. They are like kind of tiered by difficulty. So something like Final Fantasy Tactics is way more difficult than like a first tier game like Final Fantasy II, the Japanese one, right? So that is kind of how they stop you from wandering into a meat thresher with like really complicated time signatures and things like that. But so it was valuable before in the previous versions of this, but it remains valuable now, which is just, I don't know, this being kind of a playable museum of how the music has evolved across the series. So you can kind of see where themes started and how they developed. And just as the tone of the series kind of went from being more fantasy to being more like, you know, sci-fi kind of stuff, kind of appreciating the way that manifested in the music. The big thing, and I think the reason why this does not have Final Fantasy in the title, is that they are working in specifically through DLC, non-Final Fantasy Square Enix games. And they have like a whole slate of DLC coming along, including very exciting for me, not just Chrono Trigger, whatever. Chrono Trigger music is good, but Chrono Cross as well. In those, the Chrono Cross soundtrack is amazing, and I want to play, you know, levels based on that. So the idea is that this is more like broadly just Square Enix role-playing music in general kind of stuff. So there will be some real highlights in that.
Yeah. Weird if like the Tomb Raider soundtrack made its way in there somehow.
It would. It just kind of wouldn't fit in. I'm not sure if you're buying DLCs and you're also going to get characters. I'm not saying it wouldn't be fun to have a little Lara Croft, battling Marlboros and Aragims on the side, like on the side screen there.
Wait, battling like cigarettes?
Marlboro is a Final Fantasy monster. It's the big tentacle monster that poisons you with its bad breath.
And by the way, I actually, when I was in a restaurant the other day, there was a dude who had like a whole sleeve of Final Fantasy monster guys. So I noticed the Tonberry at first, but then I was like, oh, there's the Marlboro too. And I was like, I've never seen somebody with a Marlboro tattoo. That's very good.
That is good. I like that. Yeah. But it owns. Like I started with Final Fantasy VII and I worked through Final Fantasy V. Now I'm on 2. I'm just kind of going up the difficulty rankings, only on the most basic one right now because I'm just having more fun focusing on the music at this point, especially for games I'm less familiar with. But it's a good time, and it's been a long time since I've played a non-Rocksmith rhythm game.
Yay!
Very cool.
Any questions about Theatrhythm?
It sounds like very good fun.
Are you sure that's how it's pronounced? Oh man. The other game. So I've been dealing with some bad brain weather and, just did depression kind of stuff. So, I know that I've been on my, city builder management sim kick over the past few weeks and it's been great, but I realized I was chasing a high and I wanted to go to a game that I knew would be comforting. Be a little bit like coming home, something I could just really relax and settle into. So I picked back up Frostpunk.
Yay!
There you go.
Yeah.
It was only a matter of time.
Wait, so your relaxation game, it prominently involves cannibalism?
That was the joke of my setup there. Yeah. Yes, you picked up on what I was saying. And yes, it is. Yeah, no, it's a really good, relatively simple city builder survival strategy game kind of thing. Primary reason, not just comfort reason, but knowing that there is, it's not just comfort, but knowing that there is a sequel coming and knowing that there are kind of whole expansions that I haven't played yet. The game, by the time I played it, there were a couple of DLC kind of campaigns that you could play. Mm-hmm. By campaign, I don't mean like, tens of hours kind of thing. Like even the base game of Frostpunk, once you know what you're doing, you can finish like in 2 sittings pretty much. So these are relatively short campaigns, but they're tough. Like, the thing about Frostpunk is you kind of play it, fuck up, learn from that, and then try again. And so like there are a few of those that I have not played or not beaten, and so I just kind of went back and settled into the main campaign. I even forget what it's called. I want to say it's called A New Hope, but that is Star Wars. It'd be weird. I haven't gotten to any of the new campaigns yet because getting your sea legs back is really difficult. Because they're just you forget kind of build orders and things, and that was a plate that I should have been spinning. It kind of like, I was supposed to feed that dog. Kind of moments.
It's like, it's the XCOM problem for me.
Yes. So I've been just trying to I beat the main campaign after about 4 tries. I'm now working on the arcs, which is a really neat scenario where you have a static population of 45 engineers. Workers are divided into engineers and then just workers. engineers primarily being like in the main campaign, people who will work at medical posts and workshops, kind of advancing your tech tree and taking care of the sick. The idea in this is it's called the ARCs because you are attempting to preserve these facilities that have it's like the seed vault, right? The seed library. Mm. Where in case this winter ever ends, we want to be able to restart Earth. So it's like this last hope kind of deal, where you've got to weather a bunch of these storms. And then you're primarily doing that because you're just like a little science outpost, doing that through rushing to automation and automatons. So in the concept art, or, you know, in the art for Frostpunk, you see these big like walker mech kind of things. Your city is entirely crawling with those by the time this goes. Nice. And like roughly halfway through the scenario, a survivor comes in from a nearby settlement saying, "Oh God, we're doomed." And then you have to not just focus on if you choose, because you can choose to leave them out in the cold, literally. But if you opt to, you can kind of refactor your city and not just prepare for the big storm that's coming. In order to protect the seeds, but also send along convoys of supplies so that this other city full of people who were just mismanaged can survive. So it's like a last minute thing where like it's hard enough to get up to speed for yourself, but then you have a whole other city that you're taking responsibility for, which is real neat. Yeah. But it has been real fun to dip back into that. Kind of like sliding into a warm bath.
Mm-hmm. That's why I cheered for you, because I was like, you like this thing, so
yeah,
this is good.
So did you choose to?
Oh yeah. No, I chose to, and I messed it up really bad because I forgot. I forgot that was coming. I started that scenario earlier today after I got done preparing for Watch Out for Fireballs. And I got to the point where like it was like a few days left and it's like, oh my God, I need to produce so much more food. It's not going to get there in time. Oh no. Cause there's like, you know, shipping time as well on there. And it's like, yeah, I really scotched this. So I instead restarted and got back up to and tried to get a better footing under me while I was eating dinner.
So how realistic is the scenario where you just tell them no? Like, is it kind of like the bad ending, or like, have you ever even explored that route?
I mean, I've never said no to them, because that feels like that's the challenge, that like that's the challenge of that scenario.
You know, you can also, you know, quit a game before the final boss.
Yeah. So like, I'm sure that even though I had failed, I'd be able to get to credits and finish it. And the game would just kind of like, you know, tisk, tisk, tisk. You didn't save those people when you could have. And I was like, no, you trust me. I couldn't have not with the opening 3 days. Those opening 3 days in Frostpunk are make or break. Right. Mm. I screwed it up. So. I'm going to continue playing more. There's like a whole mode in Endless that called the Rifts, where you're like connecting a bunch of like little cities across the wastes, which seems pretty fun. That I just haven't gotten to. Frostpunk is one of my favorite games of the last, you know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. Love this, and the fact that I haven't played all of it is wild to me.
Yeah. Nice to know that you've got more content for something you love available.
I know, right? Yeah. Any questions about Frostpunk?
No.
The last thing I don't have an awful lot to say about, because it is just a visual novel, but I figure since Jal is here, and also because I beat it, I've kind of been playing it off and on for the last few months since it came out. I have played and beaten Chaos Head Noah.
How is it? Because I've seen you play in that, actually. And I'm like, oh well, I got to finish all the 5,000 Fire Emblems.
I've got to say, that is quite a name.
Yeah, I mean, so this is in the same series as Steins Gate. So all of them are named like that, because it's, you know, it's an anime thing.
I mean, someone went and changed the past in order to make all names ridiculous. I understand.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they didn't change. Okay. They shifted us to a different time, to a different world number, is what it is. Yeah. So it's not quite changing the past, although it's a little bit like that. There are convergence events though that, that you can't get past. Anyway, I don't care for it very much, Jala. And aww. I think that there is an awful lot about this that would actually repel you.
Oh, yay!
Because very specific. If a character is getting under my skin with how, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I don't really like, yeah, a character will be annoying or whatever, but it's not going to make me like think about giving up on something, you know, like it's not like a make or break thing. Like I know it can be for you, Jala. Boy, the big thing about Chaos Head, which is the first game that this studio made, that's the first in their science adventure series. The second being Steins Gate and then Robotics Notes and then going into sequels and stuff. A big thing is kind of seeing how they grew between Steins Gate and this, and boy, the art is very, generic. If you look at like, if you look at pictures of the characters, like they're not as distinct from each other as the characters in Steins Gate are. But more importantly, the main character is a like borderline hikikomori otaku who is the grossest, horniest character that I have seen in a video game.
Oh,
wow.
No.
So
I know some of the games you've played, Cole.
Yeah. It's so like, all right. In Steins Gate, your main character, Okabe Rintaro, I think that's the order. I always get it mixed up. He is, you know, kind of delusional and, you know, is kind of like fixated on kind of taking on this mad scientist persona for reasons that are explored. And though he grates on you kind of for the first few chapters, he eventually becomes incredibly sympathetic because of just the hardship that you see over the course of the entire story. And then like that sets up in Steins Gate Zero, him just kind of starting and always being a really good character in that, mm-hmm. because it picks up in the timeline where he has gone through all this trauma and failed. Mm-hmm. In Chaos Head, this guy lives in a shipping container on top of a building and spends all of his time playing hentai games. And the kind of the gimmick of this, so where Steins Gate has time travel that is activated by how you kind of use your cell phone. This it's psychic powers, specifically people who are able to take their delusions and make them real. So depending on if you choose a positive, negative, or neutral delusion at a particular story point, things can kind of diverge. And you kind of get trained not to take the positive ones because it is almost always like the negative ones are like, hey, here's a cool little horror scene that you see. The positive ones are just like borderline H game, hentai game kind of shit.
Oh, boy.
Not full on, right? But like, this is a character who doesn't really grow out of like talking about that kind of stuff and comparing situations to it, and just generally spends the entire story being just a coward shitbag. Very little growth is experienced on this. Other characters are fine, right? You know, you have a pretty good variety of at least character types and backstories that you're getting to learn through all of this. It is just the main character, the one who you spend the entire game inside of his head, is just really unpleasant to the point where if I felt like this was a company trying to say like, hey, this is somebody you can relate to. If somebody said like, oh yeah, this is a shoe that you're going to fit into, I would spit at them for having such a low opinion of me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And yet you're still playing this.
I beat it because I like the series, and I want to, I know that Chaos Child, the sequel to this, is much better. And in fact, I moved on. It's sold as a double pack right now. Chaos Head originally came out in 2009, and it was never released in America. Up until this point, never got a localization.
And now we know why.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, there's the meta plot of the science adventure story has a lot to do with like big conspiracy theory stuff. There's a shared mythos between them, you know, and like there are foundational things laid down in Chaos Head that like I wanted to get to and see. Not just so I could play Chaos Child, but also, you know, just like, I don't know, I like this world, just not this one person in it. So I kind of beat it. And that's why it took so long for me to beat it, is just because this guy is real rough.
you got to eat your hentai vegetables so you can get your sci-fi dessert.
We can't have the title be hentai vegetables.
Oh, God, nope. Dang it. I was going to put that in my notes.
Wait. Why not? I mean, that seems legit.
Oh, if you want to talk about hentai vegetables, I did some gardening and I harvested some of potatoes, and people said that they have threatening auras. I will show you said potatoes so that you can understand
why the potatoes are threatening me.
Here, well, also I posted the Pepsi Colgate Chun in the backstage. So
those purple potatoes are on roids.
Potatoes, yeah, it's as big as my one of the potatoes, like all of them, but like the one I have in the photo is held up to my forearm. It is the same size as my forearm, my forearm, and it has veins, what looks to be veins on it.
Yeah. Cole, if we can't have hentai vegetables, can we please have veiny potatoes?
Yes, we can do veiny potatoes.
Okay.
Also, I wasn't entirely serious about not doing hentai vegetables.
Well, I was like, well, on that note, people were like, the girth, look at the veins. It's the veins and whatever. And like, so everybody's been making comments about these. I will say, like, I got them from originally last year. I got some from the local farmer's market. And I planted one of them because we bought like a big bunch that they had just pulled up that morning. And I planted one of the little guys in a 10-gallon grow bag, and then it made 50 million very large potatoes. And I was like, you know, like there was almost no room for dirt left in there. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to transfer these guys into a larger tub and we'll see how many potatoes we're going to have this time around. It'll be enough to eat all year long. So, and they taste very good. They taste like normal ass potatoes, but like they just look
Don't say ass potatoes, please.
Ass potatoes. Veiny ass potatoes.
Oh, jeez. So. And they don't bleed when you cut them open?
If they do, they have like a little bit of a purpley kind of blood because they are purple potatoes.
Yeah, those are cursed tubers.
They are tasty. They're very good.
Yeah.
Nutrients. They're colored because they're nutrients. That's true. Look it up. So.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, so like that's a little bit why I didn't rush to you, Jala, and say like, oh yeah, I'm playing this because like I was like, okay, let's see if this guy turns around at all. Like, it could I possibly make a case that like this would be something that you would not immediately be allergic to? And I can't.
Well, here's the worst part is that you already know that because we were talking about Chaos Head and Chaos Child, I already bought a physical copy of the thing, and so I have the game, and so like I've got both of them.
No, don't do that.
I have them.
Try it. Like
I will, and when I come on here, I'm going to be very mad. It'll be exciting for everybody.
Yeah,
the table will flip.
Yeah,
you know, I just what I know about these games and with Ujala is about setting expectations. I want you to know, though, I never recommended you get this.
Yes, we will make that clear.
That said, Chaos Child is actually like it's off to a much stronger start. Mm-hmm. They've obviously learned lessons.
What? Cole has literally like lit the lighter under the spoon. Is like, just so you know, I never recommended you do this.
Well, no. different games. Different games can be good or bad. Even in a series.
That doesn't sound like what Reddit said.
Oh, any questions about Chaos Head Noah?
No.
None that are appropriate to answer on air.
Oh, don't post a buff broccoli.
That's on my shirt. It says eat your vegetables, and it's got like a buff broccoli flexing at you with a little headband and little shorts on.
He's real angry.
Yeah. He's veiny, just like that potato.
Vascular. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's me, warts and all. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've got a new game that I've been playing that I want to talk about because it just came out on PC, Returnal.
Nice. This one's just going to be passed around, passing from Ben to you.
Is this the good one or the bad one?
Yes.
What?
Which timeline are you in? Yeah, this game is real, real good. And I know Ben talked about it a lot. I'll have to geek out about it with him the next time he's on. And I'm in the thick of it, and lots of weird, crazy stuff is happening that I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I went into this knowing it was a Housemarque game and expecting like the good, bullet hell, game that it is.
Mm-hmm.
I was not expecting the amount of walking simulator horror that is in this game.
It's real neat.
It is very good.
Yeah.
And it is a necessary choice to evoke the things that they're trying to evoke. Like you could not do any of this if the zippy, bullet hell controls were at your disposal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the game, is about, a woman who crash lands on this planet. Her motives for going there are unclear, but what quickly becomes clear is every time she dies, she wakes back up at the crash site. And so the game is about her trying to escape the planet and progressively losing her sanity as she does so, while kind of delving into what's going on there and what's going on with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the game is enjoyable to play, but everything that stands out to me is on the horror side.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, when you say like you weren't surprised, you weren't prepared for the amount of it, like it's not the bulk of the game. I mean, most of it is bullet hell kind of stuff. It is these interludes that you get. It's like one per biome when you stumble upon. I mean, I think Ben even said this. So and it happens relatively early on in this H.R. Giger alien cavescape kind of thing. You'll just come across a cave that contains like a farmhouse. It is like the house that you lived in before you joined or before you left on the mission. Right. And then you're kind of like delving into the past. This house should not be there.
Or after, or maybe you didn't, or yes, you know, like it's that kind of story with the time travel and sideways dimensions. You're right. Like by time played, I have spent easily more time in the bullet hell mode. But by what defines this game in my mind, it is the tenseness and just how well executed the horror exploration is.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tight. It's very focused. It's almost always in the same space. And when it's not, it is incredibly effective.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give away just the ways that the game will start messing with the cycle that you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
But it is so good, and it really gets the most out of kind of this next gen hardware, either, you know, the PS5 or like I'm doing on a newer PC. It pays to pay attention. It pays to read what books are on the shelves.
Yeah.
It pays to like crawl through all the little details around you because they all add up to just such an unnerving and what is going on feeling that then carries you way further into the bullet hell stuff than I would expect. Like that horror lingers with you even while you're doing zippy fun combat.
Yeah. I mean, so you've been through more than one biome then.
I have beaten the game for the first time.
Holy shit.
Yes.
So you've not played this. You've played this.
I have 16 hours into it in a week.
Holy cow. Wow. That's really fast.
This is a job.
That's quick. That's really fast.
I went in the same run that I got the hook shot. I beat the game.
What?
I just got the god combo of relics. I don't even know what they're called. Artifacts.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I can't be stopped. Like I was kitted out. And then I got like my favorite perfect weapon, before the like last stretch. And so it was just perfect because one of the things that I really appreciate is that the game never lets you settle on one weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're constantly finding newer, higher level weapons, and that's built into your progression. So you don't gain levels, you gain weapon proficiency. And once you hit a certain level of proficiency, all the remaining weapons that you find will be that level of proficiency or higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. It moves you along, with a carrot instead of a stick. And so you're constantly swapping through and getting better weapons and changing up your playstyle accordingly. And I just hit the perfect art of got all the right relics, got my spit maw with a slug thrower right before the final boss, which meant that I had a shotgun's power with a rifle's range.
Hmm.
And that's all, folks. Like, you can't stop me now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got through the entire cycle on that run, which meant that I had never gone into the Tower of Sisyphus until after I had beaten the quote unquote beaten the game proper.
Yeah.
But you know, it as is inherent to the theme, everything's a cycle, even escaping.
Yes.
So that is craziness, and things only get weirder after that. Which is, it's so funny. The second I beat the final boss, I realize I'm kind of giving away that there's a cycle a little bit, I guess.
It's a roguelike. I think people expect that.
The moment I beat the final boss, I was like, oh no, I know exactly what's going to happen. And the fact that it did not occur to me what was on the other side of that final boss until the moment I beat them was so perfect. And I don't know if that would have happened had I had to take more cracks at it, but it was just the perfect moment. So yeah, I'm, you know, now in the second mega cycle. I don't know where this is going. And that's exciting. I will say though, that in this kind of second iteration, the forest around you is constantly changing, both the layout and then the fauna even. And I am so mad at the new layout.
Oh yeah.
Because there are like these pot plants everywhere. And maybe one in every 20 will have like, you know, one or two pieces of gold inside it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, this game's equivalent of gold.
Yeah, yeah. Stuff you spend on, at the shops. Yeah. Yeah.
Monies, you know. Which means that I am physically incapable of moving on from an area until I have broken every single one of these pot plants.
Mm.
And God bless this game for amazing, rich visual fidelity. But it also makes it really hard to know if you've gotten all the pot plants.
It's a real clutter. Yeah. It's a real cluttered kind of thing. Yeah.
So I am, you know, my pace through the game has slowed exponentially because I cannot stop myself from min-maxing those four or five extra pieces of gold I'm going to find in a room.
You always hate it when somebody makes their own problems.
Yeah. It is a problem, but it's my problem. And, it's like a little security blanket because I know there have been times where I am just four or five gold short of that thing I want to buy, you know, like it probably doesn't matter, but added up over the course of the game, it's probably an extra item.
Yeah.
Or it's getting that item at a key moment that you wouldn't have otherwise. And I can't get around that. For me, that's my cross to bear, I guess. That's my cycle to run. But yeah, Returnal is real, real good. I'm quite enjoying it.
Nice. Yeah, I forgot that you had history with Housemarque stuff before this. You're the only person I know who has like really messed around with their previous shooters.
Yeah, what the one that I was most familiar with was their PS3 one, and yeah. I'm blanking on the name now.
What was that? Was it like Dead Nation or something like that?
They did do Dead Nation, and that was on PS3.
Yeah, we co-opted the heck out of that in college.
Yeah, yeah.
And they made a like a sci-fi alien shooting one.
Alien Nation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The Nation games are excellent.
You're thinking of Super Stardust HD.
There it is. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Super Stardust HD is excellent.
I'm just impressed that they didn't name this one like Return Nation.
that's the DLC. But yes, Returnal is great. I don't know if there's any other questions that I can answer about it, because I'm in the thick of things being crazy and inscrutable, but that is a fun place to be.
Yeah. I'm happy it's landing for you.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I've got to talk about is more DMZ goodness. Mm. So we're back. And DMZ launched a new season. All the Call of Duty, you know, games did
a new map too, right?
A new season. There's a new map, and some much desired changes. At least in theory, they were going to tune the AI to be just a little less hostile. except somehow they did the opposite of that.
Oh,
well. In particular, they basically apparently AI runs on the inverse ninja effect. So they made the AI less effective by just adding 5 times as many enemies.
Yes. So yeah, it might, like, individual AI units might have been slightly less deadly, but someone massively screwed up. And like, you know, I played this as soon as it came out. The first couple of drops were fine. And then when I came back to play it later in the day, there was an update and massive, massive waves of tier 3 enemies. So the toughest enemies start coming everywhere on the map. And the second you get into a firefight, it's just helicopter after helicopter dropping in, you know, 5 of these guys at a time, and it doesn't stop. Like, I could understand sending in a helicopter, but it just that someone did not program it to stop dropping enemies on you.
Yeah, we were actually playing a few nights ago and actually had it just in like a normal firefight drop a mini boss, which is basically a guy in full like bomb squad armor with a chain gun.
Jeez. Yes. It makes no sense, and I don't know how you mess that up. To make matters worse, so I played that way. I was like, I you can't do that. Like, this is not fun. You die every time. And usually what would happen is you would get trapped in a house. And it's like, as long as I don't leave this house, I can at least survive. But then you're stuck there until you run out of ammunition. And then you can only, you know, survive going gun to gun for so long before you're just gunned down by endless waves.
Yeah.
So I took a break. I came back to an update and the game was very playable. I'm like, great, they fixed it. Told my buddies who, you know, I play with, oh, hey, you know, it's fixed. Come back and play. And then had to download another update and they unfixed it. I'm like, what are you doing? How are you getting that this wrong?
You have more money than God.
I know. Good Lord. I don't know how you screw this up this bad. Especially when like the objective was to make it easier. Uh-huh. The objective was to tune it back. And you explicitly stated, we are going to do that. And then like, I don't know. It's crazy. And I would be fascinated to see the organizational politics or whatever chain of events led to it going wrong. But I'm pretty confident Even Activision doesn't know.
I'm sure they would blame it on what is it? The FCC.
Blame it on the FCC or the unionized QA just, testers.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. FTC rather. Yeah.
Comparing this to, did you see the stuff with the Division 2?
No.
Mm-mm.
They were supposed to release their new season, and they announced, oh, we like screwed things up, and we screwed things up so much that we can't even just like extend the current season.
Oh no.
Like we currently cannot make any changes to the game. We broke it so badly.
We'd lost the passwords. Does anybody here's the security question. Does anybody have a good guess?
If anyone is playing the game, just please hold still.
Jeez.
Don't move your character. Yeah, so this overshadowed what is a launch of a really cool new map.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the map's great.
Yeah, it's a small little island, and I did not realize how small it was going to be. So instead of 20-ish teams on the map, you have 5, and it is real hairy from the outset. Like, you drop in, and it's instant action. But there's lots of interesting stuff to do. There's a whole, like, tunnel network throughout the islands that, as you kind of slowly start to piece it together in your mind, you can use to greater and greater effect.
Mm-hmm.
And can lead to both greater and greater loot and greater peril. So, you know, that's really fun to master and to explore, especially when you're doing it alongside everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
They also tuned the missions that they give you, which, you know, that's your primary motivator for playing the game, and made it less about like collectathons of like, you know, get 25 of these. And instead it's like, hey, get 3 of them. But they also make the missions more interesting, and more creative. For example, there's one, I think it's called Untraceable, where you have to, you know, drop in, go pick up a weapon from a dead drop, kill a boss with that weapon, and then put the weapon back in the dead drop.
Yeah.
It's like that's what I want out of DMZ, right? Like, there's just a little self-contained story, within that. Nothing too crazy, but it also has you going to different places and using a weapon you might not usually use.
And other people are doing stuff and are a wild mm-hmm. card. Yeah,
exactly. Like, if another team wants that weapon, you could get to the dead drop and the weapon's gone. So now you hope that the boss gets the team, and then you can get the weapon and get the boss. And yeah, it's great. They also have missions that cross maps.
Mm-hmm.
So find a hard drive on this map and then go plant it in an office on that map. Like, really cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, A+ changes. Like, I really like the new map. I really like the new mission structures, and they just, you know, tripped at the finish line in terms of not making a problem they were trying to fix worse.
Rewards for this season are also pretty cool.
Yeah, talk about those, because I haven't paid too much attention to them.
So this season, the new map is a Japanese island, and the new operator, likewise, you know, is a Japanese American with, you know, kind of a samurai theme.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the things are just, you know, very much, you know, Japanese aesthetic, you know, kanji and samurai and stuff like that, which is, you know, just kind of fun, you know, especially a lot of the character models are, you know, really neat. A lot of, you know, kitsune masks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know, that's just you know, just kind of a fun little silly spin on what they're doing.
It's the right level of silliness is probably the right word for a you know, quote unquote realistic game. Like, yeah. You're not running around with a horse mask on. But you do get to have these kind of cool little quirks on the aesthetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some neat, the new character has some neat stuff where his armor is both obviously, you know, modern, you know, tactical armor, but also, you know, has a definite, you know, samurai armor look. That's mm-hmm. really cool.
Yeah. They're walking that line well. So yeah, they've since fixed it. The game has gotten to equilibrium, so it is safe to go into season two now. But man, was that launch rocky? And that's me.
Nice. And David, it sounds like you played Call of Duty DMZ. Did you have anything from your time there?
Sorry about that. So I would just add, they've added a couple new weapons, most notably shuriken and katanas. Mm-hmm. I don't know how those realistically differ from like the knives and throwing knives you had previously, but they're effing cool, damn it.
Right.
Other than that, the Modern Warfare 2 itself was on sale, so I picked that up. So I've been playing playing both a little bit of the single player and a lot of the multiplayer. I think Dennis's kind of take on the single player pretty much says it all. I think the big thing is just, I don't think you can make a interesting modern war game while being quote unquote not political. Like, that just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, just everything has this obvious
serial numbers filed off kind of thing.
Well, and also it's kind of a thing where it's like, it's, there's only two ways to read it. It's either A, just overtly like jingoistic, or it's what I think it actually is it's just toothless.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's constantly things going on that like should have commentary on them, but don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also trying, think I'm going to keep a running count on how many war crimes the heroes commit. So
that's hard for any game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to explicitly show your characters killing wounded soldiers.
Yeah.
Like, that was a choice. But
yeah, yeah. And that's kind of built into the loop of gameplay if you're doing any of the down but not out modes.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking straight up just in cutscenes, them just like walking into a room where people are like on the ground moaning and they shoot them.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's just weird. I'll probably play it just because, and it unlocks some things. It just seems really boring. On the plus side, the multiplayer is actually pretty good. They've, you know, the core game is very solid. You know, great graphics, you know, stuff like that. They've added a sort of pseudo battlefield mode, where it's, you know, 32 players, and there's actually weapons. Yeah, there's weapons in this game.
Yeah.
There's vehicles that will spawn that you can, you know, get in and pretty much just go around at high speed and try to run people over.
Okay.
And there's actually two modes. One is just players, and it's kind of a capture the point. The other also has CPU enemies, and it, you know, it's just a death match. Unfortunately, I did not play it during the buggy times to know if the just unreasonable waves extended to this mode. But other than that, just like, that's pretty much just what it says on the tin. If you like that gameplay, you're going to like it. The only big things I have to say is the time to kill is probably about 50% too short.
Okay.
But they do have probably my favorite new perk. There's a perk called, I believe it's It's like high profile target or something like that.
Okay.
And basically what it does is anytime an enemy can see you, but anytime a enemy is looking in your direction, not necessarily targeting you, but just basically, can see you and you're not looking at them, you'll get an indicator on the edge of your screen.
Okay.
Kind of a shine type thing. And it only shows you, is it coming from like behind, to your left or to your right? But it still basically makes it so that, you can do a lot more, particularly on the bigger maps. Like if there's a sniper or something, it makes them much, much less cheap. Because, as soon as you like run into an open area, you'll see this indicator and know that someone's covering it and trying to camp you.
That's valuable information. Yeah,
it is really good. I guess somewhat similar to that, they've also made all of the scopes now have like a shine effect on them. And so, if you're facing towards someone that is using a scope, it's, very obvious where they are.
Yeah, you get the glint. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
So it makes you think about when you're sniping, like, all right, I'm not going to look down the sights until I see something moving.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I don't snipe because I'm not a horrible person, but but yes. Other than that, my one complaint with it, I think, is probably, well, other than, snipers, is the bunny hopping is just at another level in this, because they've added both the ability to dive to prone and the ability to, if you're sprinting and crouch, you'll do kind of a slide. And so you'll just have people constantly, running, sliding and then going prone, running, diving to prone, just over and over again. And it's, sometimes when someone does it well, that's something I can respect. But when it's just someone just doing it over and over again, it's really annoying.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, so this isn't bunny hopping like I would have defined it back in like Quake 3.
This isn't bunny hopping in order to go faster. It's just, moving super erratically.
Right.
It's like when Tim Allen in Galaxy Quest is rolling from rock to rock.
Okay.
On that desert planet.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know, like, I can understand, quote, the, I'm doing air quotes, it's part of the game, but I'm just not a fan of gamesmanship.
Right, right.
But, you know.
Easier to hit, damn it.
Yep. So, but yeah, no, it's, it's a good game. I like, that they've made it so that, you can now use things you unlock on one weapon, attachments and stuff on different weapons. So there's actually a reason to go through and level up every weapon. So there's a lot of good things they've added.
Yeah. But nice.
That's all I've played this week. It's been a light week.
Yeah. Real heavy on COD.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gotta get those omega threes.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. I want to do a whole episode about that sigh.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, we're going off meta today. So, we all have that build or deck or strategy that is completely suboptimal, but you love it anyway. And we wanted to hear about yours.
Yeah. I'll get started here with Callum, who says, in real-time strategy games, I always like to build bases that look cool and concentrate on set defense systems too much. Hey, as long as you don't mind losing, that's fine.
Yeah, I really want to see someone make a real-time strategy game with the explicit purpose of making building viable.
Making building viable.
Like, every real-time strategy game I've seen, it's all about just, you know, racing to bring together an army as much as possible, as opposed to building up the tech tree and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you get Civ, like Settlers does that. They're like combination city builder strategy game kind of things. Those are out there.
You're like, you know, my fortification is perfectly symmetrical, and the other person's like, my fortification looks like a cat. Oh, damn, you win.
I lose. David, what does Brian say?
Brian says, my pride and joy EDH deck is almost entirely foiled out Dragon Lord Silumgar, which my friends call Mr. Steal Your Girl. Almost every throw in the deck either copies or steals cards from my opponents. It's not the most powerful deck, but when it works, it's hilarious to just have a full board of other people's stuff.
Yeah.
So what is EDH?
It's apparently a Magic variant or subgame called Elder Dragon Highlander.
Huh. Yeah. Presumably there can only be one, except if you're playing his deck, in which case there can be lots of them.
Is it impossible to be Elder if there's only one, or are you Elder by default?
Elder by default.
Okay. Jala, what does Peter say?
Peter says, when playing any game, I generally like to play the build that triggers effects off of effects. The less of the screen I can see, the more damage I'm doing. However, my suboptimal build is Lumbering Slow Dude that hits super hard. Big Green for Magic the Gathering, Great Hammers in Elden Ring, etc. Guess you might call it a glass cannon, but with the hit point pool to take the hits. However, maybe my most favorite would be an Elden Ring with Comet Azure and all the magic enhancements that I can get.
I call that the Radagon boss skip. Oh, man, because the Elden Beast is a terrible boss fight. Then nothing wrong with Comet Azure. And they give you a set of armor that is specifically meant to buff it. So I think they want you to, they want to be able to play with that. Dennis, what does Greg say?
Greg says, in JRPGs, I always tend to overlevel my characters, make sure I have all the best gear and items in an area before moving on, make sure all side quests and optional stuff are done in an area before going to a new one, and tend to hoard my items more than I need to, as that pack rat just in case mentality is hard to overcome. Not impossible, though. I'm getting better at that with more recent JRPGs I've played, Dragon Quest 11 and Persona 4. So you're not suboptimal for the game. You're just suboptimal for time invested.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Use your items.
Yep.
Yeah. Nothing is too good to use. Oh, Ollie says, I blame it on Doom and Doom 2, but I can't stop using shotguns in FPS games. it just feels right, you know? And in sports games, Madden, FIFA, etc., I sometimes play entire games just throwing Hail Mary passes / Route 1 football, the soccer equivalent. It's a stupid, stupid tactic, but it's just so much fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. or you do the opposite and just keep throwing flea flickers. Oh God, it was real fun. I've played my fair share of Madden in the past, mostly because my brother, you know, he liked playing those games and wanted people to play against. Mm-hmm. And just like running the same like just onside pass play over and over again just to piss him off was really fun, because when we play Mortal Kombat, all he'd do is duck down and uppercut. And then just like back away when he saw me rolling up to sweep kick.
Two can play at that game.
Yeah,
we can across genres even.
We can both make sure neither of us have fun. And David agrees on shotguns. Not David.
I do agree. I've been cleaning up with shotguns in COD, but
yeah. Well, there we go. let's see, David. What does David say?
Yes.
The haver of amazing names says, I don't really do suboptimal play in video games, unless we're talking about going against the meta, in which if it's not pistols and shotguns, then I'll just eventually stop playing. In Dungeons & Dragons, I prefer to go suboptimal for roleplay purposes. My first 5th edition character was a half-orc bard. One of the other players kept trying to get me to go in front and tank. I was like, dude, I have a sling and a set of drums. I'm here to throw rocks and talk shit. My eventual favorite was a lawful good warlock who started out trying to convince the other players not to kill things, but eventually Breaking Bad and its store legend around my table how bloodthirsty she became. So one of my dream D&D games is to make a party where no one is allowed to be a primary class for the role they're fulfilling. So like your healer would be a celestial patron warlock. Your spellcaster would be a thief, acrobat, rogue, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. That'd be real, real good.
Yeah. I'd be down. I mean, I no, it sounded like I made a horrible time commitment. No, that'd be a neat concept. Sorry.
Too bad. I already spent 4 hours writing backstory.
God damn it.
You'll feel bad if you tell me no now.
Welcome to hell.
Your Thursday nights are mine.
Oh, man. Let's see. Jala, what does Eli say?
Eli says, in my experience, Dex intelligence builds haven't been super viable since Dark Souls 2. Doesn't mean I'll stop trying, though. And hey, Elden Ring threw me a bone with Moonveil, so there's that.
Hey, I keep on going back to Dex in Elden Ring. So I think you're onto something there.
So it's nice here. In Bloodborne was the equivalent of Int. That was the one that lets you use the like hunter's tools.
Yes, yeah.
Is like Arcane or something?
I think it was called Arcane, which is really frustrating because that's a completely different stat in Elden Ring.
That is super wildly a thing already here, so.
Yeah. let's see. And then, Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
Always melee and no shield run for all the Soulsborne games. No interest in magic unless it's for buffing my avatar or my weapon.
Nice.
Yeah, this was almost mine. I feel really bad. I can kind of identify with this because I feel really bad whenever I'm playing Souls games that the only way I can really play is just giant weapon and smacking dudes, which seems like the least intelligent, just like, I don't know, easiest way to play the game. And I always feel guilty about it.
No, you need the most mastery over your windows of opportunity. A quick slashy weapon, you can always be, you know, sneaking in an attack or two. No cost to that. When you have a 3-minute windup, then come talk to me.
Yeah. When pressing the attack button is like preheating an oven.
Preheating the attack button.
Yeah.
It does also let me just like berserk role play. So, you know, that's an advantage.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like my answer for this is going to be, I don't know, my first RPG being Final Fantasy IV broke me somehow. And I've like really fell in love with the Lancer class that Kane, you know, Kane was, so they carry a big spear, do big jump attacks, take you off the screen and you do lots of damage, stuff like that. And so like, my character in Final Fantasy Tactics, like Ramza, is always a Lancer, combination Lancer ninja, which makes no sense, but still, I mean, it makes sense for me. So
I mean,
jumping. Lots of movement is how it goes. Do a lot of damage and move very quickly across the map. And like I even like just thinking about this, maybe you remember, I even like worked on a build that was like this for D&D back when we were playing, David, when we played with Kyle.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I remember. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was real fun. Yeah, so that was a good time. I tend to favor Dragoons, Lancer kind of guys.
Did you ever play Final Fantasy Civ? The MMO one?
14? I'm curious about it. Just time commitment kind of thing. I'm positive it's good. It's just, yeah.
I think you can Dragoon in that one. But yeah,
there's a Lancer Dragoon class. Yeah. It exists. David, how about you? I mean, if Dark Souls two-hander is not your answer, what is?
So I think mine is in a lot of shooting games, I generally spec much more into ease of use for a weapon as opposed to necessarily being like highest skill ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like being able to reliably use the weapon well is more useful than being able to sometimes use the weapon with extreme proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So like I haven't figured out if this is actually the equivalent in this one yet, but back in the day in Modern Warfare 2, my go-to was the SCAR, which was like the most generic assault rifle in the game.
Hmm. Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Look, mm-hmm. You don't want any surprises in your brap, all right?
Jala, how about you?
I have various answers for this, depending upon what game we're talking about. If you want to talk about overall, I would say exploring everything before advancing the story. I tend to break games when I'm doing that. Mm-hmm. And also it kind of fucks up the pacing of the game when you do that. But then too, if we're talking something like a Dark Souls or an Elder Scrolls game or something like that, I tend to play, if you leave me alone, I will play a character that's more like a spell sword, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. So like, you know, I'll have a fairly decent sword and also try to use some magic at the same time. And depending upon how I come about the combination and what game we're talking about, that may or may not fly very well. A lot of video games tend to favor specialization. So mm-hmm. that means if you do a little bit of a lot of different things, then you aren't nearly as viable. So there's that. And then if you're talking shootery games, I will use a sniper rifle like by default on everything, even if it's point blank. And yeah, I will just roll through the whole game with a sniper rifle.
Nice. Making you poison to David.
Yes.
Since he disdains snipers
yes.
so much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you use them at point blank, then they're fine.
Dennis, round us out.
Yeah. For card games, I love mill decks, which, the win condition is use up all the cards of your enemy. Not even copy them. Like our other answer, just get them all discarded so that they don't have anything to draw. And that's how you win.
But
usually that means your opponent always has like a full hand of cards. Cause you're like doing things that draw cards for both of you or whatever. And it's just fun to watch other people, panic because of options.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so many things I could do. I don't know what to do.
Oh man. A bit more trollish than most decks I've heard about.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Nice. Well, thank you everybody for writing in. And thank you, Dennis, for posting this and for using the Marge Simpson. I just think they're neat.
Yes.
image with their potatoes.
Continuing the theme of potatoes.
Oh, God. It was prophetic.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. We're getting closer to that being the title, and I don't like it. I don't care for it at all.
What was it? Hentai potato or something?
Oh,
that's even better. Now, it was hentai now vegetables or veiny potatoes.
Or, you know, I preferred cursed tubers since we're having this discussion.
I am so well that we have time for that. If you would like to participate in this cursed show, you can go to Facebook, go to the Facebook community, Duckfeed community, and respond when those prompts go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games. And we're going to be real quick about this one, if I'm being honest with you. Jala, what's happening in the intersection between horror movies and video games?
Blumhouse, who produced Megan and The Purge, is now going to be creating a video game division. That's it. That's the story.
I hope they, I mean, if they're doing adaptations, I really hope they make one about Creep.
The God, end.
Creep is a very good movie. The end. There, yes. there we go. Cool. Let's see. I didn't expect it to be that quick.
I could have made it longer, but.
I know, but I'm tired. Dennis, what game am I absolutely going to be playing in March?
Yeah, so Terra Nil, the reverse city builder, has a release date, and it is 3/28, so just over a month away. Get hype.
Yeah. City builder game about ecological restoration. Mm-hmm. That had a demo in Steam Next Fest, and I missed the window, so shit.
To be fair, Frostpunk is a game about ecological restoration if you're bad enough at it.
it's about temperature equalization. Yes.
Yeah. By the way, it's coming to both Steam and Netflix, which, as someone who has made a concerted effort to play Netflix games and still not been able to figure it out, I want, you know, to have coming to a Netflix subscription thing be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But like between all their password sharing BS and it being completely inscrutable on how to get to it on any device other than, a PC.
Yeah.
Like you try to do it on your phone. You can't try to do it on anything that you normally would watch. Like I watch Netflix stream it from my PS4. I stream it from my phone. I stream it from my iPad, anything except for a PC.
Yeah.
By the way, if I wanted to get Netflix installed on another device that I use, you've just made that harder. So I'm going to be playing this on Steam.
Yeah, no, it's Steam's a good way to go, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got one that is very much just kind of a thing is happening, but Frogwares, the Sherlock Holmes people make the Sherlock Holmes video games, also made The Sinking City. They are working on a re-release, like an updated remake of Sherlock Holmes The Awakened, the Sherlock Holmes game where he runs up against a Cthulhu cult. And also there's a very tonally dissonant chase in New Orleans to the most raucous Dixieland like banjo music you've ever heard.
Oh no.
Yeah. That was going to be coming out here relatively quickly, but given the fact that Frogwares is based out of Kyiv, Ukraine.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, this has happened for a ton of developers. They're safe, but you know, it'd be hard to get out of the situation not scathed. And given the circumstances, I'm fine with them delaying the release by a couple of weeks. So I need to see what the actual, so they're saying it's going to be like sometime in March or April, as opposed to sometime in February, which is a-okay. Yeah. And David, round us out.
Yeah, Wilson's made a new basketball. Don't got no air.
Is it just solid? Why'd
they do that?
So it's 3D printed, and it's actually the opposite of solid. It's just full of holes. It looks sort of like a beehive type of thing, except it's not hexagon. It's just holes, but just this lattice.
A bowling ball. You're talking about a bowling ball.
Yes, I'm talking about a bowling ball.
Huh.
Apparently it weighs the same amount as a basketball and bounces the same.
What's the benefit?
I think the idea is it can't go flat.
Okay.
So what I don't know is does basketball have deflate gate? Have there been instances where that's been a problem in at the competitive level? Because I'm assuming this like 3D printed basketball is probably not going to be affordable for like the kids, you know, on the street corner that might like not have a pump to, you know, fill up their basketball.
Yeah. I would need to know more. It looks cool. Like
I'm just going to say it's incredibly telling that none of the promo materials in this article show someone actually dribbling the ball.
It's also just a prototype. So I don't know if they do they actually have plans to distribute it?
They have not said yet.
Huh.
The only thing, the other interesting thing is apparently it's additive 3D printing. So I guess there's a powder and it gets blasted with a laser that solidifies it.
Okay.
I don't understand how that works, but that's why I'm not, you know, a highly paid 3D printer engineer.
I was gonna say, isn't additive 3D printing just injection molding?
Yeah, that's why I don't get it. Confuses me.
Yeah. It looks cool. It looks sci-fi. It looks like a basketball and a Deus Ex game. So that there's value there. Huh. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons!
Let's do. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 448. We're really glad you made the time. If you would like to help us out, you know what to do. You can participate in the multiplayers, like we said, at Duckfeed Community on Facebook. You can back the Patreon. You can leave ratings or reviews wherever that is possible. Tell your friends. Talk about us on social media. All of it's really good. And all of it does help and make a difference. Also going to remind you that Gary and myself are going to be at the Midwest Gaming Classic on March the 31st through, I believe, April the 12th. April the 12th. Be wild. April the 2nd. That's going to be in Milwaukee. If you are in the area, we would look forward to seeing you there. But otherwise, I think that's it for us. Jala, what's happening at Jala Chan's place?
Yeah, so the first episode of February was on attraction, different types of attraction, and how that relates to your identity. It was a very interesting and fun episode that will have a kind of part two delving into some particulars next month. And the last episode was on Who Censored Roger Rabbit, which was the original novel upon which the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit was based, very, very loosely.
Hmm. So I realize this came out decades ago, but that title sounds like the title of like an alt-right YouTube video.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be Who Canceled Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So either way, we had a very interesting and fun conversation about that. And that book is interesting and weird and not like the movie at all.
I'm sure, because I doubt that they actually use like Disney and Warner Brothers like characters in that. Or was it all just its own tune kind of thing?
The original novel is actually about comic strip, like newspaper comic strip characters.
Oh, okay.
And actually it's kind of sad. The author of that book, he wrote that book in 1981 after the movie came out, and I think it was 88, 89, something like that. He wrote three other books in the Roger Rabbit series, but they all came after that movie, 1991 and I think like 2013, and then one last year. And like all of them are way worse. They're inconsistent with the first one, and they are pandering towards the movie. So it's really sad because like basically the reason I wanted to talk about that book was because it's not great writing, but it's like the kind of writing that is something kind of like a Lovecraft situation, where I feel like the stuff that people made after it was so interesting. And like, I felt like there was potential for this to have developed a weird following and like a whole bunch of like sequel stuff that people did using like his world building and stuff, because there's a lot of really interesting things he does in the first book. But then it's so inconsistent from book to book, and like the later books are all bad. So anyway, like it's a weirdo, and that's why we wanted to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So
nice. And where can people find that?
At jalachan.place.
Fantastic. Dennis, you got anything you want to hype?
That Deck of Wonders is out now. It's out. So get it if you haven't. Enjoy it if you have.
Nice. Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me. I do my video game and joke tweets on Mastodon now. Just at Cole Ross at mastodon.social.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on the Deck of Wonders Discord.
I'm David Mysmith. You can find me playing Call of Duty.
I'm Jalachan in every place that I can be found, including jalachan.place. I am also on mastodon.social at Jalachan. So also there.
Nice. Cool. And stick around for some titles. Okay. I only have one because it kind of seemed like a foregone conclusion. Oh, wait, no, I didn't have one. There was one that I thought about, but I neglected to write it down. Well, shit.
Now it's lost to the ether.
It is.
That's okay. Jala. It'll be taken over by hentai vegetables and veiny potatoes.
Yeah.
I will also, like I said, add cursed tubers was said at the very end of that.
Yeah, so I had it's not horny, those potatoes are on roids, and hentai taters.
Also, oh, no. I had preheating the attack button.
Yep, I wrote that one down as well.
Okay.
I did have one more, which was from way back in the beginning. Before it was pre-hentai vegetables. But I kinda like it. And that's just making the episode title A New Hope.
I don't know about that, but I can write it down.
Yeah.
I would really prefer veiny potatoes.
We made him say it.
That was the trick. You got me. Mostly because I'm going to read the titles we've had so far this year, and I want to see if you guys notice a theme.
Okay.
Okay, episode 441 was No, not necessarily on theme, but also a good title. Episode 442, You're About to Get Pitied, hasn't started yet. Episode 443, A Horny Seesaw. Okay, uh-huh. We're starting. Then we go to These Pants Are Holding Me Back. And then we have Carrot Bottom. All of those in a row.
Oh, that's so good.
That's great.
I mean, we already have Carrot Bottom. Veiny potatoes is redundant.
No, it's different.
It's great. We're just going to name all the vegetables. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, the veiny potato might be a top. You never know.
So, there's a little bit more plausible deniability on veiny potatoes to me, unless somebody has it's got to be something from that trench. I just want to know if anybody disagrees with my reasoning on that.
Veiny potatoes is fine.
I mean, I'm always a fan of, you know, leaning into the horny, but you know, that's why we don't ask my opinion.
I mean, I do. Oh gosh. Cool. So veiny potatoes it is decided.